who is Krishna? Or who is God? So if I throw this question at you, do you have any thoughts of how you would like to express who is God? How do we understand what is God? Because after all, when we are talking about Krishna, we are talking about understanding God or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So do you have any conception about God from whatever exposure you may have from the past? Feel free to share. I would like to first see from new audience and then I'll come back to you. I just want to see them. Huh? Present moment itself. Now you're experiencing God. Is that what you're saying?
Present moment itself is a...
Moment is God. Is that what you're saying? Okay. So you are relating Krishna to time, essentially. Is that correct? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that Kalo Asmi, that I am time. Because time is one of his energies. That's one answer. That's okay. Any other? Okay, why don't you share? Nobody wants to share. Very nice. Very nice answer. Thank you. Okay, thank you. The three O's, omnipotent, omnipresent and omnibenevolent. The three O's. Any other thoughts about God? Huh? What does it mean to be supreme? He is the Paramatma, okay? And what does it mean to be Paramatma? Who is Paramatma? Who is that Paramatma? What is the relationship between Paramatma and Krishna? Both are same, okay? What is the specific role of Paramatma?
He is
what, can you...
Sakshi Buddha.
Okay.
He just watches. Like,
he is watching. He is watching. Okay, great. Nice. Any other?
Yes, limited role.
Sure. He has some function, right? Some function. I'm just trying to extract out. You mentioned one function which makes sense. That he is overseer or one who is looking. Yeah? Any other? Yes, please.
The ultimate mystery.
Huh?
The ultimate mystery.
Ultimate mystery, okay. It is said by, there is a statement of Srila Jiva Goswami that Jiva Goswami is one of the greatest scholars in our lineage, in our disciplic succession, or the Gaudiya Vaishnava disciplic succession. He says that in order to enter into understanding of God, the first thing that you need to accept is that God is inconceivable.
Shall I say in Hindi?
Yes, please.
Hari Anant Hari Katha Ananta Gaam in Ved Prat Murti Santa. So it is no end of this power or
this. Okay. Sabse unchi shakti, okay? So the greatest power, that's what you were saying, okay? That's fine. That's kind of similar to what he was saying. The omnipotent. Okay? Very nice.
I understand that achitya, inconceivable. But at the same time, we see such a personal and intimate relationship that as you approach me, I reward you accordingly. So there's this reciprocation, there's this person.
Yes.
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 And it doesn't seem so inconceivable, it just
yes.
seems so commonsensical that you know, Krishna would be everything that you were looking for and not so distant and mysterious and just very intimate and close.
Right. So he offers his closeness to those who want to be close to Krishna. It's a function of our own desire. Those who do not want to be close to Krishna, they are far. Those who want, so that's the whole point about this verse. Whatever you want, I am there.
however way you want to deal with me, I'll reciprocate accordingly. And therefore, in that sense, everyone is following path. We are kind of getting into that answer to that question. I mean, there are so many people who don't care about, I don't want to know who you are. So Krishna says, so be it. So he reciprocates with the desires of everyone. But if we want to know Krishna intimately, then Krishna will reveal himself to us. When we, let's say, go into a laboratory setup, okay, like when we want to prove something in this material world, right? The only way to prove something in this material world as a practical evidence in laboratory setup is really controlled experiment. I mean, you cannot understand something unless you're performing a controlled experiment in which, like, you are in control of the whole experiment. You exactly know what kind of data you want to derive out of your experiment. If you do not know, if you do not have clarity, even after performing the experiment, you would not be able to get the value out of it. In other words, you need to have the ability to have some control over the object that you are learning about. Now, what happens if we throw an object that we have no access to, there's no way you can control that object? Then there is no hope for us to understand that person or that thing without actually humbling ourselves. Jai Shri Radha Gopi Vallabha ki jai, Shri Gaur Nithai ki jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai. So in other words, we cannot perform any controlled experiment for Krishna. Because Krishna is not something we can control. We are under the control of Krishna. When we accept Krishna's control in our life, then there is hope for Krishna to reveal himself. And therefore, for those who want to exchange loving relationship with Krishna, they're essentially submitting themselves to that relationship. And it's that realization about Krishna comes as a product of that submission. Yes. 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 So, in fact, Krishna says that the formula for getting control is pure devotional service. Right? Now, that control is a control that Krishna offers because of the submission of that devotee. That control of Krishna, it's a paradoxical thing. When the devotees stop trying to control Krishna, to the extent one has stopped to control Krishna or his energy, to that extent, Krishna allows them control over him and his energies. So therefore, it is paradoxical. To the extent that one has reached the pure platform where they have stopped any notion of control and understanding that I am simply a servant, that's the point when they get all the control. So it is controlled by love. And therefore, I'm saying that the only access to Krishna is really through one's submission. Just like if there is anything that is outside of our control, how can you know about that which is outside of your control? You cannot know by controlled experiment. You cannot try to just manipulate things and then hope to develop clarity about that thing. You cannot do that. When it comes to Krishna, it needs that submission. So now, God can be defined, you can say primarily in three ways, but there could be other definitions that could be given. One of the definitions is coming from Bhagavad Gita and also coming from other places, is that God is one who is the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhava mattha sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante maam bhudha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna says that I am the origin of everything. Everything emanates from me. And those who know this, they engage in my devotional service. So God is one who does not have a beginning, and he is the beginning of everything. He is Adi and Anadi at the same time. Adi means he is the primeval Lord. Nobody is before him. And Anadi means nobody precedes him. He is the origin of everything else, including all the other personalities whom we consider to be higher powers, like whether it is like personalities like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma or whatever, as long as there is a person who is the ultimate controller or ultimate master, who is the origin of everything else, so therefore we cannot, like, when we talk about Hinduism, it is a misunderstanding that Hinduism is polytheistic. Because polytheistic means there are many gods. But by this definition, there cannot be many gods. There can be only one God. Because God is someone from whom everything else originated. Similarly, in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it is said that natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate natat samascha abhyadikascha drishyate. That God is one who doesn't have any duty to perform. And God is one, no one is equal to or greater than him. Right? So God is one, no one is equal to or greater than him. So how can you have multiple gods when there is a very clear definition that nobody can be equal to or greater than him? So by definition, God can be only one. There cannot be two gods. And Krishna himself, in the pages of Bhagavad Gita, he is just revealing himself as that Supreme Personality of God. And therefore Prabhupada chooses to use this word, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because God just implies a controller. Like, for example, we may be controller of our children sometimes. We may be controller of our shoelaces, that's for sure. Or we may be controller of our specs. In this way, we can identify objects that we are controllers of. So we are God to some extent. But at the same time, we cannot say that we have control over everything. We cannot say that. So Krishna is the supreme controller. So Ishwaraha Paramaha Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. So God is one who is the cause of all causes. He is the supreme controller. He is the primeval Lord. Nothing precedes him. He is the origin of everything. That is God. And therefore, by definition, God can be only one. And therefore, Krishna very kindly revealing to us who that one singular person God is. And therefore, he is saying that Aham sarvasya prabhuva matta sarvam pravartate. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Once you know this, that I am the origin of everything, automatically you will redirect all your worship, all your loving propensity towards me. There is no other option left. There is no other option left. And similarly, Krishna also says, I mean, there are, in Bhagavad Gita, there could be so many verses that can be quoted just to establish who is that singular person who is the origin of everything else. That is Krishna. That Krishna also says that Mattaha Parataram Nanyat Kinchidasi Dhananjaya. That know that there is no truth superior to me. There is no truth superior to me. There is one word that is used in Hindi, Bhagavan, right? For God. Bhagavan. One means one who is a possessor of. Possessor of what? Bhaga. Bhaga means opulences. So Parashar Muni kindly describes what does Bhaga mean. He kind of defines the word Bhaga. He says that Aishwarasya Samagrasya Virya Yashasaha Shriya Gyan Vairagyas Chaiva Shada Itingana. That Bhagas or opulences are essentially six in number, which are Aishwarasya Samagrasya, which means the riches or wealth. Virya, strength. Yasha, fame. And then beauty, Shri. And then knowledge and renunciation, Gyan and Vairagya. So these are considered to be six opulences. So one who possesses all these six opulences simultaneously and to the highest possible degree, that is God. So we can imagine in this world, we have experience of when we see one such opulence like beauty or wealth or power, we get attracted. Right? So can you imagine if there is one person who has all these opulences to the highest possible degree and simultaneously, how attractive such person would be? It's going to be the supremely attractive person. And therefore, the name of such a person is Krishna. because Krishna means all attractive. Or there cannot be any better name than Krishna. We cannot call anybody Krishna. Yes, we can call just for purifying ourselves, but we cannot really literally mean that person's name to be Krishna, because Krishna means all attractive. And Krishna is all attractive because he is the possessor of all opulences to the highest possible degree and simultaneously. And therefore he is God. So that's the understanding of God. Now here, how fortunate we are that Krishna is revealing himself by saying how we can realize Krishna. How we can realize to the extent of our surrender. Now most of us, when we come to a temple, we don't come with the understanding of trying to surrender. I did not. I'd like to share how my own spiritual journey began. It was many years ago. I was 10 years old. So I was living in a place in India called Pune in western part. Now I come from a Bengali family, so naturally there is an understanding of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu. These things actually at least are there. We don't understand what that means, but it is there. That yes, there is someone called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there is someone called Nityananda or Gaur Nitai. So somehow or other, my parents, they saw in the newspaper that there is going to be an appearance day ceremony for Gauranga Mahaprabhu or Lord Chaitanya. And they felt, wow, in Pune, celebration of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wow. So immediately we went there. Now, at that time, I have been into meat eating and all possible habits are there, which are there usually in any Bengali family. Like fishes they call, in Bengali family, the fish they call Jalopushpa. They give an euphemistic term for it, that it's the flower of water. But when you go close to the fish, it doesn't look like anywhere close to flower. But the thing is that they get used to getting that smell so much so that they relate that to pushpa or flower. That extent of, so to speak, contamination existed in my own life. So it so happened I have very vague memory of that first first time visiting an ISKCON temple because of that advertisement that we saw in the newspaper. We went there and then we saw like there were 56 course meal that was offered to the Lord, and obviously like when we do not have any specific goal of going to the temple for taking shelter or with any understanding of God, naturally we get drawn towards those other aspects which can somehow or other feed our senses. And naturally the food is the greatest attractor. So I still remember to what extent they had like fed us. Not only they have fed us, but they fed us with love. And then they sent us with lots of books and so on and so forth. I still remember the face of the devotee who was so enthusiastic in giving us prasadam or the food that has been offered to the Lord, and then gave us books, cassettes, so that we can at least develop some connection. And that's all I remember from that first contact. But I still remember the colors of the food, and it's so attractive. And I specifically remember the aroma of the temple. One thing that we find when we enter an ISKCON temple, just by the smell, like we can find out, oh, I have entered an ISKCON temple. Even if like we are led to the temple blindfolded. Once you have like smelled the temple that has been set up by Srila Prabhupada, even if you are taken blindfolded to any Srila Prabhupada's temple, you would be able to recognize. That is the power of purity of Srila Prabhupada that he has invested. So anyway, so what happened? I was just 10 years old at that time. But just that experience was enough for me to think that, okay, I don't want to eat meat. I was never told. I just gave up. And then I gave up fish and eat fish and meat at that time. Also driven by my own images of like how the slaughterhouse scenarios look like. In Western countries, slaughterhouses we don't see. It's a very interesting place. Like here, the different things that we hear about as gruesome, as something which we feel that we don't want to associate with, they are very carefully quarantined in this country. In this country, we don't see death face to face. We don't even see old age, so to speak. Because they have been carefully designed to keep it in isolation, just so that like people can just focus on sense gratification. But in India, it is very commonplace to see death all around us. And the death of animals is also a very commonplace scene. Like they would be like on the roads, they would be slaughtering animals. So when one sees that, it's very hard to actually think that I'm eating the flesh of an animal which has been slaughtered in a, such a gruesome manner, where the animal is just shouting out and howling and crying. Animals don't like to be slaughtered. So anyways, because of that combination of that image and because of that touch that I got of the transcendental things which are part of Srila Prabhupada's temple, that was sufficient for me to give up meat and fish. But at the same time, I was attracted to eggs, so I was continuing to eat eggs for some time. But then, many years later, one thing that I remember from that experience is that when we were, because my father had a transferable job, after some time we moved back to Calcutta. In fact, just immediately 1 year after that experience. And then I still remember, I started actually even chanting a little bit. Because after understanding that chanting is important, I started trying to chant on beats. I still remember, like, during that whole journey from the train from Pune to Calcutta, throughout the journey, I was just chanting. Somehow, there was something. But then, after a while, because of the association, I gave up that. But because that connection was established, we got Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So I started actually reading one verse of Bhagavad Gita as a pious activity, as a ritualistic activity. After taking a bath, I'll read one verse of Bhagavad Gita. At that time, I was reading in Hindi. And that's it. Now, many years later, many meaning about 7 years later, I got admitted to the Indian Institute of Technology, Kharagpur. And this is the first time I'm going away from the parents. And it's a hostel life. So I picked up that habit and I continued. Even while living in the hostel, so I used to have this habit of carrying one picture of Krishna I would put on the wall. And that picture of Krishna is really a cutout from a calendar that we had received from a store. And I still have that particular cutout of the picture that I used to, after taking bath, I used to just regularly offer incense and then read one verse of Bhagavad Gita. That used to be my practice no matter what. But my understanding was not at all there. It was just like ritualistic, as I mentioned. I was trying to understand, but the understanding was not deep. And therefore, I used to be regularly challenged by my classmates. And I was in IIT Kharagpur, which is considered to be a premier institute in India. So I was surrounded by like those people who are really going to be the future leaders of the society. And therefore, they're also, to that extent, when they pick up the bad habits, they also take those bad habits to the extreme. So I was surrounded by many kinds of association. But I kept on going. So during that life within IIT, one day somehow, while I was served the breakfast, with eggs. That day, somehow, like by Krishna's mercy, I got a very strong revulsion towards it. Just the way it was cooked and all. I said, I'm going to give up this. Why am I maintaining this habit? So I gave that up after that experience. It was in the third year. And then after that, my journey continued. And in 1998, I graduated and then went to Delhi for my job for 2 years. And there, I was surrounded by like the like-minded friends. Now, this all of a sudden, I'm out of school and getting a lot of money. But I do not have the intelligence how to spend money. So every day, my experience was like, we would come back from office and our whole, like we used to live together, like three of us. And our whole objective is that after coming back from the from office, our whole idea was what to do today. So go out and spend money. How to spend money? Like we would go to the fast food joints and this, that, like play games and so on and so forth. That used to be my life. But because I have got this contact, I was maintaining the same habit. But still, because I did not have the association, I was not able to pick up further. So I had left chanting, that initial chanting that I had done like many years ago while traveling the train, were lost completely. And then in 2000, I went to California, joined University of California, Irvine, for my graduate studies. And there, for the first time, I got the first freedom to explore spiritual life. Because now I am away from that kind of setting, and here I am in the in a lifestyle which is where I am meant to just study, and that too because it's a research-oriented study, I have a lot of freedom. So in the very first year, we got a car. I shared a car with my friend, and that car gave me a mobility to go to the temples nearby. So I was in Irvine, and the Laguna Beach Temple used to be 12 miles away. And then the San Diego Temple used to be 70 miles away down south. And Los Angeles Temple used to be 50 miles away. So I had access to three temples. So I used to start going to the temple on Sunday feasts. Just trying to pick up from where I left, so to speak. In 2002, I got my internship in San Diego, and it was for a company called ST Microelectronics. And I was living in the campus of UCSD, UC San Diego. And because I did not carry my utensils, I was completely dependent on a neighborhood temple for my food. So I started going to the San Diego temple for my dinner. And I used to go for dinner, and then I used to help clean up, and then after clean up, there was one devotee called Dravida Prabhu. Dravida Prabhu is one of the editors of Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. He's an extremely scholarly devotee. So this was the first time I'm encountering a person who just like verses would flow mellifluously, like, and he can quote like all kinds of scriptures. So he was offering a class on Dharma, the way of transcendence, which is like Srila Prabhupada's commentary on the first canto, second chapter, some verses, very prominent verses. So after helping with the cleanup, I used to sit back for that lecture. And I started developing attraction towards the devotees. And especially, I used to ask lots of questions to Dravida Prabhu, and his way of answering questions and the way he would quote verses, that was so attractive for me. Then I started going for Bhagavatam classes also. So because I was developing this strong like attraction. So now my schedule used to be, I used to go in the morning for Bhagavatam class. I'll sit with the devotees, have breakfast with them, and then I'll go to the company for internship. I was there for 3 months. And then after my internship day, I'll come back to the temple for my dinner and sit for the lecture. And there, just within the 3 months period, I got association of so many different sannyasis, including His Holiness Radhana Swami. And I still remember the class that I was sitting, like it was very close to Janmashtami. So he was speaking on the pastimes, the childhood pastimes of Krishna. It was so mesmerizing. It's just amazing experience. So in this way, like as I was like going to the temple and meeting devotees, my attraction for hearing was just increasing. So in 2002, when I came back, now because of the internship money, I purchased a car where I did not have to share with anybody. So I had the freedom to take that car anywhere I like. So I started actually going to Los Angeles Temple, driving 50 miles every Sunday. And I was driven by, actually at that time, driven by strong like desire to hear. And of course, prasadam. And then there was also some devotees that I met who introduced me to a regular program that was happening in the area. So I was, my whole weekend used to be filled up. Like Friday used to come, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We used to just attend programs. I had no time during the weekends. That used to be my schedule, just driving and just hearing. So in 2002, I met my spiritual master, His Holiness Ramapad Swami. And that was the time when I was forced to start a Bhakti Yoga club in my campus. And since then, like he gave me a lot of his own personal association. So when he used to come to the campus for speaking, he used to stay in my own apartment. So in this way, you can think of like right from the time when I went to the temple in Pune, when I look at my life, it's like Krishna watching and just giving me more and more opportunities. Now, in 2004, I started to chant 16 rounds. And in 2004, so 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which takes typically 2 hours. So I had the practice of really taking pictures of the deities, and I would, whenever I would go to the Los Angeles temple, I used to be so attracted by the deities. Every time I used to go, I used to click from different angles, and then my whole practice used to be, like I'll play those pictures in slideshow mode, and then I'll chant in front of that slideshow. So in 2004, February, one time, I was just watching the picture. And there was one particular picture I took at a particular angle. And then all of a sudden, I just realized that the picture that I am seeing, it is the same picture I used to worship when I was in the hostel. So now, can you imagine the connection between the picture of one of the temples of ISKCON? And I happened to get that picture, a cutout from a calendar, which is sold, which is like given from a store, which is not even an ISKCON temple. And that's the picture I used to place, and then I used to do my regular rituals. It's really amazing, like how Krishna, even if like there is a little bit of step from our side, he takes hundreds of steps from his side to open up opportunities for us to take up Krishna consciousness. And that's what I see in my own life. In fact, that's not the only event. In 1997, so internet just came into picture. But because I was in the computer science department, I had access to the first printer, so to speak, first colored printer that came to the campus. And then it was not even colored printer, it's an inkjet printer. Because we were used to dot matrix printers. This was the first time, like, so we used to spend nights in the lab so that we can get access to printing something. So somehow or other, by making some searches, I hit upon the some pictures of Radha Krishna, Gaur Nithai, and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. I remember printing them, and then I created a collage of those pictures and kept it in my house. And incidentally, those pictures also happened to be the temple of New Dwarka. Rukmini Dwaradish in the middle, and on the left, Gaur Nithai and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. So it is no coincidence that Krishna is always there to attract our heart. I have personal proof of this verse in my own life. That as you surrender, although my surrender was not at all even close to maturity, it's just a little bit like responding to the pull of the devotees. That's what my surrender was. It just, devotees are pulling and I'm just saying, yes, I want to do this. And even with this, like so much of opportunities just opened up one after another. So devotional life or surrender, life of surrender simply means filling up our life with remembrance of Krishna. And the best way to remember Krishna is by hearing about Krishna or hearing the instructions of Krishna and also chanting. Because chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra is non-different from Krishna. Because Krishna is the Supreme Absolute. When something is absolute, that means there is no difference between the person and his different attributes. Therefore, Krishna and his holy names, they are non-different. So when we are chanting, we are actually experiencing Krishna's personal presence. We may not know because our senses are still blunt. So the whole idea about surrendering our life to Krishna so that we can realize Krishna's presence in our life is to dedicate to the process of hearing and chanting. And I would request all of you to try this. You can start, if you're not chanting, try just begin with one round of chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Srila Prabhupada has invested his blood into this whole society. He has given practically his whole life. So all we can do is, from our side, we can just say yes. And the whole dimension of opportunity will open up. I can guarantee that it's going to open up. Because I have experience in my own life. It's an adventure. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.